Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to another Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio, your weekly technology show looking at, the world of technology, funnily enough, from a blind and partially sighted perspective. And as I just said, it really is your show. So if there's something that we should be talking about, or if there's something you want to share with us, get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be catching up with the team behind the popular assistance app, Be My Eyes. We hear about a new social group for gamers from the RNIB. And we discover one option for what you could do with your unused accessible technology. That's all coming up this week. Hubert Pavalkovic and Natalie Curran are with me this week. Welcome back to both of you. Natalie, I'll start with you this week. What's new?
Two things I wanted to mention this week. One of which I nearly mentioned last time, but I thought I'll hold off because that'd be a good experiment. And that is, I treated myself to the new AirPods 4 from Apple just after Christmas. So we did for the January sales. And what I wanted to mention, actually, because we talk about headphones quite a lot on the show, and I think I mentioned before that I really hate earphones that properly go in your ear, that have like those wee rubber bits on them. I know they're very popular, they're very good for noise cancelling and all that kind of stuff, but personally I hate them. So I had avoided upgrading my AirPods because I thought that all of the ones after AirPods 2 had those rubber things, but I was wrong. It's the Pros that have them, not the standard ones.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pleased to report that the AirPods 4 have no rubber bits, and as I'd hoped, I think the quality of the mic is better. The sound is probably much the same. I was quite happy with the sound, but for doing shows like this, I wanted the mic to be better, and I think it's worked.
I mean, I think it is. It's a weird one, the AirPods, the microphone on the AirPods. I mean, I don't know. They claim studio quality sound from the new AirPods, and if you're on the latest software, and I've noticed mine, I mean, I've got the Pro 2, and the mic quality has improved a little bit. I wouldn't call it studio sound. I don't know what studio they're referring to, at least on mine. Although, are you using them now?
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, they do sound good.
Thanks. And to be fair, my previous AirPods 2 maybe weren't given a fair chance, seeing as I let them go for a spin in the washing machine. So they stood up very well to that.
Well, they do say clean them regularly, so I suppose, you know, that is one way of doing it.
Yeah, I took that bit too literally. And the other tip...
Yeah, not advisable,
sorry. Yeah, no, definitely not. And the other tip I wanted to mention was, I've been having a lot of Wi-Fi problems recently, and I decided to bite the bullet and upgrade my router. So, don't know if it matters, but I am with Virgin, and I went from the 3 to the 5. That's not the important bit. The important bit is the reason I was upgrading is because I've now got loads of devices connected to my Wi-Fi. And I thought I might as well just get a stronger signal to support all of these smart home tech things that I've got around the house. But my heart was sinking at the thought of having to reconnect all of them. You know, 20 plus devices, and some of them weren't that easy to connect in the first place. But my previous Wi-Fi router, I had renamed. So I'd given it a name specific to me and a password specific to me. So I swapped all those mumbo-jumbo letters and numbers that it gives you as default into something that a real human could understand. Well, when I say I did it, my brother did it for me. And when I got the new router, I gave it the same name and password, and all my devices auto-reconnected. So it was a huge relief.
That is a good tip, is that? I always do that with Wi-Fi, just mm-hmm. change the name and the password.
I didn't know that would mean that it would automatically reconnect. It was the engineer who'd come out a few weeks before to try and fix the old one who mentioned it, and I thought, that is very worth knowing. And similarly, I didn't know if it would work if I upgraded, you know, if it, because it's got different addresses and technical, you know, bits associated with it. But no, it did. Like I say, it's such a relief because if I'd had to go around all my radiator valves, all my Alexa devices, and redo them all, I think I would have been crying.
Yeah, I've always found this to be a nightmare, especially now you've got the smart home stuff. Because, like you said, they're so awkward to reconnect to everything. I've got a bunch of smart plugs, and trying to get those on the Wi-Fi was a nightmare. But yeah, you can do that if you ever get a new setup. Just log into the router. Of course, the admin panel accessibility varies. On Virgin, it's all right. Not great, but it's pretty good. But yeah, go in there, change the name and password to exactly the same as what you used to have. And then there you go, everything just picks it up. Hubert, what's on your tech radar this week?
So for me, it's the return of something. So a few months ago, I had my Meta glasses broken, and then, in short, because it's quite a long story, I bought the Oakley Meta Vanguards because they're, you know, water resistant and just a bit more durable. So hopefully, if someone walks into the side of my head again, they may not break so easily. I then had a lot of pairing issues, and to cut long story short, over the last few months, I've been going back and forth with Oakley to try and get a replacement pair, which was a lot more complicated than in my opinion, it should have been. However, the main point is my Meta glasses are back. I've got them again, and I've just forgotten how much I miss them. You know, when you have a certain piece of technology that becomes a part of your everyday life, and then you suddenly don't have it, you realize how much you miss it, which is when you have it back, you realize how much you've missed and how useful it is to have them back again, being able to, you know, take pictures, recognize things with the AI features. Like yesterday, I had to find batteries, be able to handle, you know, hands-free messaging. I'm just glad to have them back.
Is there much of an upgrade with these then?
I think the big things with the Vanguards, really, I mean, it's a different design, so it may not work physically for everyone in terms of comfort. They kind of look a bit like more like ski goggles. So whereas Ray-Ban is more for a kind of elegant look, the Oakleys are a lot more sporty and a lot more sunglasses kind of thing. So that's probably worth keeping in mind. The camera is in the center, so that's a little bit different, although. As I said before, I think whether how much difference it makes in terms of functionality, I don't think it makes a massive difference. The speakers are a lot better. They're a lot nicer on the Vanguards, I would say. Outside of that, the other improvements they have is a battery life. Obviously, is quite decent on them, apparently, supposedly. But because I've never had problems with the Ray-Bans, battery life, that's not going to be an issue for me. Cameras a little bit higher quality, kind of all your usual favorites. And yeah, they seem to be more durable. And yeah, I walked yesterday, got soaked in the rain, but the glasses still work. So yeah, not too bad.
that is. See, I don't really feel the need to upgrade yet, but I'm waiting to see what because we've got this API coming later this year, which is basically where people can developers can develop essentially apps to run on the glasses, and I'm waiting to see what comes out of that because if there's things that are only available on the second gen glasses, or there's things that work better on the second gen. Then that might push me to upgrade, but the rain thing is annoying. I set off to work yesterday and it was throwing it down, and I wanted to wear my Ray-Bans because I prefer them, but I just stepped out, felt how much it was raining, and thought, nah, it's gonna have to be the AirPods today then.
That's the thing, and I think,
Yeah,
I mean,
well.
I only upgraded really because someone broke mine. Otherwise, I wouldn't have really done it because I thought the rain is a bit annoying, but it's not worth another few £100, really, to be honest. I just used the AirPods. However, you know, because I was f forced into upgrading because of the circumstances, I thought I might as well.
May as well, yeah.
I might as well take that issue out of contention, and it has, and it works pretty well so far. You know, I'm going away next weekend, so it'd be good to be able to read restaurant menus again, with you know, and other products. So, and to take pictures to kind of share and such. So, no, it's good to have them back, and I've realized how much I miss them when you know when you have them back and you get all that functionality again.
Can I ask you, Hubert, where you sent the Meta glasses back to be repaired? Because I've mentioned a few times I'm having a problem with calls. Let's be fair, I haven't tried for months because being wintered in Glasgow, it's been rather wet. But I partly the reason why I haven't worn them as well is, to be fair, the fact that I'm just frustrated with every time I receive or make a call, they disconnect, which for me is part of just the basic attraction of them. You know, be able to do things hands-free, which defeats the purpose of the most basic hands-free thing I can't do.
Now, I haven't taken phone calls on this pair of glasses, but with my Ray-Bans, I'd say phone calls on my Ray-Bans were a mixed bag. Sometimes they'd connect and I'd hear it through the glasses. Sometimes they would disconnect and I'd have to stop, dig around for my phone. So it was a mixed bag for me. I've not really had phone calls on this one, but I'll see what happens kind of as I use these glasses more, as I'm sure someone will phone me at the most inconvenient time when I'm walking, which is when most people want to talk to me, apparently, when I'm not able to really take phone calls. But yeah, I'll give it a go and see how it works, because like you say, I'd expect this to work smoothly, because, well, that hands-free calling and messaging is one of the many things you can do on it, and you should be able to therefore do it. And if you can't, then no, we've got a problem.
I was just wondering where you sent your Meta glasses to be fixed, because mine were a Christmas present, so I don't know. You know, it's not so I can take the receipt and go back to the shop and be like, these are broken.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because I think the best thing you can then do is contact. So if you've got the Ray-Bans, you'd have to reach out to Ray-Ban and you'd have to probably obtain a proof of purchase from the person that's bought them for you, because they will ask for that. Although what I found is their service portal is not the best with accessibility. Hence, I attempted to get them to do it for me, with information being provided over email, which sounds fairly simple, but yet it was more complicated than it needed to be.
You guys were talking about CES last week, and Steve Tyler gave us a brilliant rundown of all the things that were kind of talked about and were new there. So definitely go back and have a listen to that episode if you haven't already heard it. But something caught my eye, which hasn't got as much talk, especially in our community, as I thought it would have. This is a new device from HP, which is coming next month. And like most computers, it's not the most catchy name, the HP EliteBoard G1A. And this is essentially, or at least as far as I understand it, this is a full-blown desktop computer inside a keyboard. So it's just a keyboard, basically, but inside that, you've got a full computer running. So you've got a processor, you've got RAM, you've got, it comes with Windows 11 Pro, because I mean, this is aimed at enterprise users. So it's a pretty powerful, pretty beast of a machine. It's a Copilot plus PC, which means it's got the capability to do a lot of local AI features. You can have it with up to 64 gigabytes of RAM and 2 terabytes of storage. So I dread to think what the price is going to be. There's no info on pricing yet. At least I dread to think what the price would be for that specification. But this is a pretty powerful, and there's an optional battery for it as well. And I'm looking at this thinking, obviously it's got all your ports there to connect to monitors and connect a mouse to it, all the things that you'd need. I think where they're going with this is that when I go into the office, for example, and many workplaces are like this now, you take your laptop in and you've just got the one cable that you plug in, and that gives you your power, your monitor, your Ethernet. There's USB ports in there that you can plug into. It just gives you everything just from the one cable. So I think what they're thinking is, well, rather than carrying around a big kind of bulky laptop, just bring your keyboard in, plug it in, and there you go, you're off. But I'm thinking this could be the ideal blind computer, really, surely.
Sounds great for us, but I can't see why the mainstream would want it. And then you mentioned obviously you can plug in to monitors and mice and stuff. And that's something actually I find very funny, that for the last couple of decades, to be honest with you, probably longer, we've been making technology smaller and more compact. But we've now reached the point where it's so small and compact that people can't see it or use it. So you're actually going back the other way, where people are starting to bring their laptop into work, but they're connecting to a monitor, they're adding on a mouse, they're adding an external keyboard, and they've got more clutter on their desk than ever before. So actually, from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. And it might even be a bit lighter as well, because some laptops weigh a flipping ton.
My curiosity with this is, you referred to it as a, could it be a blind computer? Now, my question is, would it work without a monitor? So, say you turn it on and it just produces audio, or does it have to be connected to a monitor still of some sort?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know about that because I don't think anyone's got hands on with it yet, or at least I don't know of any blind people who've got hands on with it. So, yeah, that I'm not sure about.
Because what I'd love is, yeah, to carry that around and not have to worry about a display. Yes, that would then make it a very good device, unintentionally so, for blind and partially sighted people. But it's, if you then have to connect it to a display for processing to be good enough to handle everything, then, that does pose an issue. But if you can use it with or without a display, that could be a game changer.
Well, it could. I mean, just your keyboard and set of AirPods or a wired headset or whatever you want to use, and then that's kind of everything. It's funny though, Natalie, you said that about the mainstream. That's my assumption of where they're going, to be honest. A lot of the commentary that I've seen about it is from my point of view, I thought that straight away for us, how this could be good. But a lot of the mainstream press that I've seen of it have described it, gone into detail, and then kind of had an air of, this is what they've announced, but why would we want this? What's the point? But I think it could be good. I'm interested in this. As I said, it's aimed at enterprise, so there's a lot we don't know. Price and whether it's going to be one of those things that's just sold to business customers, like some computers are. I mean, let's be honest, especially if they're going with enterprise, it's not going to be cheap. But I'm interested to learn more about this, I think. I think this could be really cool. Okay, well, another packed show as always this week. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Today we'll be talking about Be My Eyes. Joining me to tell us all about it is Chief Marketing Officer from Be My Eyes, Mr. Andy Bailey. Andy, thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, Hubert. Good to be with you.
So for anyone that hasn't kind of used Be My Eyes, what's the simplest way of explaining kind of what it does and how do you support blind and partially sighted people?
We started in Denmark, actually. It was a gentleman called Hans Jørgen Weiberg. He started life as a Danish furniture craftsman. But in his 20s, he got diagnosed with a degenerative eye condition. And one day, he actually lost his keys and he was inside his house and he was locked in. He couldn't find his keys. So he called his daughter on FaceTime, and through her sort of looking through the camera of the phone, they managed to find the keys. I know it's a simple thing, but he that was a lights on moment for him. He realized the power of that one-way video call between someone who is blind himself and a sighted person. In this case, it was his daughter. But he thought, I don't want to keep bothering my family with, questions about what color shirt is this, or where are my keys today, and that sort of thing. He thought, how about I crowdsource this? How about I can, if I could crowdsource volunteers to do that task, and just connect through to somebody randomly, wouldn't that be a powerful thing? That was his lights on moment. He built an app with some help from others. The powerful thing was that within just a few weeks, there were literally thousands of volunteers who had downloaded the app, and there were hundreds of blind and low vision users that had downloaded the app and started using it. We've now got almost 1 million blind and low vision users and 10 million volunteers across now about 180 countries, speaking almost every language on the planet, about 150 languages. And then I guess a couple of years ago, we started a partnership with OpenAI. And at that time, they had an unlaunched model, which was all about visual AI. And they wanted to work with us to start interpreting images on behalf of our users. So fast forward a few months later that year, we launched a thing called Be My AI, which then gave our users a choice. They could either still call a volunteer, or they could ask this AI agent what was in front of them as well. So now we take about 4 million of those chat sessions a month.
Now you also have a service directory of many, many partnerships, which I have certainly used before to greater success. For example, the Microsoft Disability Answer Desk to help me when I decided to break my Windows computer. But that's quite a unique feature as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
We provide all of that services that I talked about, the volunteers, the AI and so on, free to our end users, our blind and low vision users. But obviously, you know, as a commercial company, we have to pay for that service somehow. It costs us money. So again, a few years ago, we decided to use our infrastructure, the same technology infrastructure that I've described, but to apply it to paying customers, big brand organizations like Microsoft. They were actually one of our first customers. But obviously now alongside a host of other household brand names. And the logic is, instead of now the blind or low vision user connecting through to an anonymous volunteer, they connect through to a specialized agent in one of our customers. So a service agent, perhaps a service agent from Amtrak or a service agent from Tesco. Or here in the UK, again, a service agent from BTEE, if they've got something wrong with their, I don't know, their home Wi-Fi or something, or their mobile service. So it's using the same infrastructure, but instead of connecting to volunteers, they now connect through to a specialist agent of one of our business partners. And that's been very successful over the years.
Now, from your own perspective, what have blind and partially sighted people told you they value the most and in Be My Eyes? You know, any feedback that has particularly stuck with you?
Our blind users really value that and see that we are a kind of part of that community. We have many blind and low vision employees ourselves, and we tend to try and develop our products. We have a phrase internally, we develop our products with, not just for, our blind users. So we tend to try and engage with our blind customers even before we start developing new products and services. I think they also value that we provide all this for free. That comes from Hans and that original philosophy, if you like, of we think it's a human right to have the same access to things as sighted people. You shouldn't have to pay for that. If you have to pay for that, that's not giving true equitable access to the same things that sighted people have, right? So that's deeply ingrained with us. So free is important. And the third thing I'd say, I believe our customers, as well as our end users, value us for is innovation, that old word. I think they see us as pushing the boundaries. We certainly did when we were the first to launch a visual AI model. More recently, again, some of your listeners might know that we have a partnership with Meta, and specifically their Meta AI and Ray-Ban smart glasses. We're the only accessibility app that's available natively on those glasses.
What excites you the most about where, you know, Be My Eyes is heading, whether it's new technology or new partnerships or new ways of supporting independence for blind and partially sighted people?
The opportunity for blind and low vision people has never been greatest. I think there's a lot of emphasis, particularly here in Europe, but in the Americas as well, and more broadly around the world, but particularly here in Europe, where the emphasis and the rights of disabled people generally, but in particular blind and low vision people, is coming to the fore. It's becoming more important in every part of every life. You only have to look around at even legislation is now becoming more and more higher up the agenda, and people are having to do more and more to make lives for everyone much more accessible. And I hope that a company like Be My Eyes is helping facilitate that. I think we certainly are raising the noise level of why this is so important. Honestly, not just because it's the right thing to do to provide equitable access, but frankly, to businesses, it's a commercially good thing to do as well. And it's in a sense an untapped opportunity for businesses. So if we can help drive that agenda even more than where it's got to now, which, as I say, I think it's got got to its highest point ever, then I think that's a good thing for everyone.
And for those who, you know, haven't tried Be My Eyes yet, what would you say to them to encourage them to give it a go?
It's very simple. Download the app. Whether you're a blind or low vision individual, or whether you're a volunteer, or even whether you're a business, download the app and try it out for yourself. There's nothing to stop you doing that. But we welcome users of all types from anywhere in the world all the time. So just try it out. It's free.
Thank you very much, Andy Bailey, Chief Marketing Officer at Be My Eyes, for telling us about the app. Thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
There's a world of gadgets and technology out there to help blind and partially sighted people with everyday tasks, but what do you do with your old tech once it's not needed anymore? Joining me now from Sight Loss Shropshire is Charity Manager Swan Starr Snodgrove. Welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello.
Well, to start, Swan, tell us a bit about the work of Sight Loss Shropshire.
Sight Loss Shropshire, we do what it says on the tin, really. We support visually impaired people across Shropshire, including Telford and Beacon. We've been going for over 100 years. So we do things like living over sight loss courses. We do a lot of fun social events. We work with visually impaired young people. And we do a lot of tech. And more recently, we started an equipment rehoming service.
And the equipment rehoming service that you're now providing, how did that come about?
It came about in the shape of people phoning us and saying, my nan passed away and she's got this big video magnifier. Can we have it? So at the time, we had a shared office. And as we didn't say no to anything, things started clogging up under my desk. Every time I kicked the wrong box, a talking clock would start howling the time at me. So we thought, hang on, is there not a different way of doing this? Is there no one here who takes these sort of pieces and rehomes them? And the answer was no, there wasn't. Obviously, we then thought, like, well, a lot of the items here, they're actually worth a lot of money as well, really. And we started taking them to our events, to our courses. But it was a very inefficient way of running it, really. So we decided to recruit a volunteer. We started having bigger offices. So we created a bit of a storage space. And the way it works now is somebody wants to rehome an item, they contact us. We can either send them a free postage label if it's a small item, or our DBS volunteer, DBS check volunteer, can go and collect the item from their home as well. So even if you can't lift, say, like a video magnifier or talking kitchen scales, whatever it is, we can help with that. It's a door-to-door service, really. So that volunteer then would take the items, would clean them, would check they're working, would pad test them. Then they all go on our website, sightlossshropshire.org.uk, look for equipment rehoming. So there's a description of each item on there that's ready for rehoming, a picture as well, if that's of any use to you. And all you have to do then on the other side, get in touch with us and say, I'm interested in Robert's radio or this. These talking skates would be really useful for me. And again, if it's a small item, fairly easy to explain, we'll just post it out to you. If it's something of more value or something that might need setting up, a volunteer can come to someone's home, set it up, make sure it works all right, make sure they understand how it works. He might have downloaded some instructions, a manual online, really. So we really make sure that it lands somewhere where people can still make use of it. So lots of benefits to this. It's a complete door-to-door service, and it saves a lot of items going simply into landfill as well.
And what kinds of equipment can be rehomed? Are there certain items that are sort of good for this service or things that you don't accept?
So by and large, if you can make sure they are in working order, that's all right. It's sight loss specific items. So we're not running a car boot sale here. So anything that is sight loss related, we try and stay clear from anything that involved, obviously, anything to do sort of with medical items, so pill dispensers, that sort of thing, things that might have been around your faces, maybe not those sort of things. But by and large, if you're not sure, give us a call and we'll sort it out for you. Any assistive kit, anything that was useful for you, to you during your sight loss. So we have things on our lists like Robots radios, talking food thermometers, talking kitchen scales. We've got some really large, valuable video magnifiers here. So some of them go up to a value of £6,000. If anyone wants those for free, they're just here. They're here for grabs. And you can also come if you're not sure which item is right for you, make an appointment with us, and our volunteer will go through what might be suitable for you in our offices as well, if you can make it out, really.
What types of technology have you found to be in highest demand so far? Are there some items that you keep hearing that people are on the lookout for?
The thing that always goes in the blink of a heartbeat is handheld video magnifiers. So, like a handheld Clover magnifier, that sort of thing. They're really, really popular, or little desk stand devices. So, if anyone has any of those that they can't use anymore, they get snapped up really quickly, and we're really grateful for them.
Is it a chance as well for people to get to try bits of technology that might have been out of reach previously? A lot of assistive technology often comes with quite a high price tag.
It does, absolutely. And what we find is we still can support people financially a little bit and give some contributions to some items. But not everybody is sort of very comfortable with this approach. But people are a lot happier sort of picking up a pre-loved item and giving it a new home, really. And that's the beauty of it. It's like it's a win-win-win situation for everyone.
Well, if someone in Shropshire would like to donate old or unwanted and working equipment, how can they do that?
Just get in touch. Our phone number is 0777 8956 096, or our email is admin@sightlossshropshire.org.uk. There's a triple S in there somewhere.
And where's the best place to find more information about all of the work of Sight Loss Shropshire?
Just have a nose in our website, sightlossshropshire.org.uk. We are on all your usual social medias as well.
From Sight Loss Shropshire, charity manager Swan Starslargrove. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Bye-bye.
Today we're joined by RNIB Social Action Community Coordinator James Kyle to tell us all about the RNIB Gaming Group, and we're also joined by Kelly and Louise from the group to tell us what it's like. All three of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, no problem.
First of all, very simply, can you tell us about the RNIB Gaming Group, please?
The RNIB Gaming Group started in November of 2020. It was during lockdown, close to maybe restrictions coming off a wee bit. So we had to run our groups either by telephone or on services like Microsoft Teams. We had some community interest from Northern Ireland come through about possibly doing something gaming related in a peer support group. But my colleague Fiona Joyce in Northern Ireland, she wasn't sure how to get that started and like what sort of interest there would be in it. And she didn't really have any expertise in games herself. Thankfully, one of our mutual colleagues, a chap named Alan Knox, was my manager in a previous role, and he was the main man for admin on the old Community Connections team. So he put Joyce in touch with me because he knew that I was really big into gaming. I'd sight loss myself and I'd done some work around accessible gaming, and we got it started from there. We promoted the group to both the Scottish and Northern Irish communities, and we got quite a high level of interest. We've filled the group up really quickly. It reached capacity within the first few weeks, and it's been going on like that ever since, every week on Thursdays from 4 to 5 on Microsoft Teams.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Louise, Kelly, coming to you both, how did you get involved in it?
I got involved in the group by my sister. She was in the RNIB Connection Northern Ireland Facebook page, and they did a post on like people like want to know about gaming and making new friends and stuff like that. And because I had really no friends at the time during lockdown, my sister all set up and then was like saying to me, oh, go into this group, you'll be fine, there's Fiona and all, you'll be making new friends. So she wanted me to make new friends basically that had the same sort of sight loss as me. So I've been going to the group in 2021, mostly at the end of that year. And I've been there ever since, so it's quite a staple for me to go every Thursday.
Meanwhile, I joined in 2022, I think it was. Yeah, it was a little while after I'd started going to the RNIB groups in person again, like the craft group and things on Thursdays at the Hillside building. I ran into James kind of in the lobby of the building. I heard something about a gaming group and I was like, there's a lot now, which immediately sparked my interest because at that point, I was the only VI person that I knew that was interested in gaming at all. So I jumped at the chance to join.
It's interesting there that you touched on
being kind of the only VR person that you knew who was into gaming. In the 4 to 5 years that you've both been involved in the RNIB gaming group, how has accessibility within games itself changed?
I think it's changed immensely, but it has a long way to go. And with me being a trophy hunter, which means like getting achievements and all that, there's a little bit of stigma around using the accessibility features to get trophies more easier, but they're actually for everyone to use. That's what I feel whenever I talk to our trophy hunters about that sort of situation, really, and to not be afraid to use them if you need them. So it's sort of like giving off less of a stigma that it hinders the gameplay, but it makes it better.
The game industry as a whole has gotten better about incorporating accessibility from the ground up, like considering it when in development rather than throwing it in last minute, which means that the accessibility options are more limited. But there's still issues, like, for example, if there's an option for large text in menus, it often doesn't go quite large enough. Other games, for example, will have audio description, which is, I wouldn't say common, but it's becoming more of a thing, especially with bigger studios that are able to support incorporating that into their games, which is very nice. And any game that has a lot of tech, if they can incorporate a screen reader or make it compatible with the screen reader that someone uses on a PC, for example, that can make a big difference in terms of accessibility. So I think I would probably agree with Louise that there is definitely strides that have been made, but there's also definitely a long way to go until everything is properly accessible, because there are still a lot of games that while I like the sound of, I know I'm just not going to be able to play.
Moving on now, you both mentioned the social aspect being part of the RNIB gaming group. Can you talk a little bit more about that and just how important that community is?
I think that the group is really good, and the fact that we are all gamers, but yet there's none of this sort of like console wars or talking over each other or anything like that. And plus two, we're all friends at the end of the day too. We can actually recommend games to each other, see if it actually works for our sort of like vision point, things like that. That we can actually, you know, organize a gaming session so we can actually play all together in a way. That's quite good, I find.
I think I would second that, in that being able to compare accessibility features with others has been really helpful, and also just playing together.
Finally, James, coming back to you, how can people find out more information about the RNIB Gaming Group?
Yeah, you can find out more about the RNIB Gaming Group by contacting the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or you can email gaming@rnib.org.uk or, again, helpline@rnib.org.uk, and either one of those would be able to put you in touch with either myself or Fiona if you're based in Scotland or Northern Ireland. One of the things I should note is that the group that we have for the two regions I just mentioned, it's somewhat unique in the UK. We, prior to this year, we did have a goal of setting up peer support groups around gaming across the country, but we found what worked a little bit better was to direct community members, if they are in a region where we don't have a gaming group, to independent sort of visually impaired gaming community that's run by blind and partially sighted people, most of whom are RNIB volunteers or former staff members or their staff members with other VI sector organisations. So it's run to a very high standard and to this, you know, similar expectations of moderation and things like that. And that's where a lot of our community members meet up outside of the gaming group. They use Discord community to keep in touch with one another and also to network with similar blind and partially sighted gamers from across the rest of the UK as well.
Brilliant stuff. Well, RNIB's James Kyle and also Louise and Kelly, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No worries.
Smashing.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Just before Christmas, Hubert mentioned that he'd got himself an Orbit Writer, the Braille Bluetooth keyboard for your smartphone. And of course, it's a gadget that I don't have and not had much experience with, but he got me tempted. And Santa was very kind to me this year for Christmas and got me one. So I've been playing around with it as well. And one thing that we have both noticed and both spoke about on the show is that this doesn't seem to affect Android, but it definitely affects iOS. If you lock your iPhone, the Orbit Writer will disconnect from the phone, which means you can't unlock it using the writer. You've got to unlock it using the screen and your Face ID or your Touch ID or whatever. And then getting it to reconnect can be kind of fiddly, at least in my experience. But there is a workaround for this that I discovered. So this isn't going to be a full demo of the Orbit Writer itself. This is just a quick tip so that if you've got one, or if you've got any other Braille display where this happens, because this isn't just a setting for input devices, this will also work for Braille displays as well by the looks of it. If you're having that issue, this could be a fix for it. It has been for me, so hopefully it will be for you as well. So I'm just going to show you what happens first. So I've got my iPhone here and I've got the Orbit Writer connected to it. So if I just kind of move around a little bit using the writer.
Calendar, right, photos, camera, clock, 9:20, maps, weather, notes.
So that's working. Everything there is, I can do the chord commands as well to say jump to the bottom of the screen.
Mail, 7 unread emails.
So that's all working. But now if I lock the phone just by tapping the side button. Now you got that little sound from VoiceOver to indicate that it's been disconnected. And there was two little buzzes from the Orbit Writer as well, which hopefully came through. I've got it kind of close to the microphone, but it's disconnected. So if I press some buttons on here now, it's not doing anything. So what I need to do now is grab my phone and unlock it. I'm just going to do Face ID to do that.
9:30. FaceTime.
So now we're unlocked and it should take a few seconds and then it should reconnect. I found that you sometimes have to just kind of tap around a little bit to
weather, get apps, wallet, home, contacts, FaceTime.
There we go. And it's reconnected, so now I can use this again.
Photos, camera,
etc., etc. So that's how it works currently. But if you go into the VoiceOver section of settings, so settings, accessibility, and then VoiceOver, I'm just going to use Siri to jump right there just to speed things up. Open VoiceOver settings.
Settings, accessibility, back button.
So we're in VoiceOver. And now we want to look for Braille.
VoiceOver tutorial, speaking rate, adjust the speaking, speak, Braille, Afmantis Q4, match input and output.
So we're in the Braille section now. I'm just going to jump to the very bottom of the screen and go back from there, because that's just a little bit quicker.
Vocastability button.
And what we're looking for is the Orbit Writer.
Orbit Reader, 2.0.
There it is. It is an Orbit Writer, but it comes up as an Orbit Reader on here for some reason. So now we've found that, we want to do a one finger swipe down to get to more info.
More info.
Double tap on that.
Braille commands button.
And now we're in the specific settings for the Orbit Writer. So if we just go through this screen.
Back button. Orbit Reader. Braille commands button. Disconnect on sleep. Switch button on.
And that's the option that you're looking for. Disconnect on sleep. Now at the minute it's on, and it's on by default, or at least it was for me. And it's on by default for other Braille displays as well that are connected. So for example, my Mantis Q40, it was turned on for that as well. This issue doesn't affect the Mantis, but there's another reason for that, which I won't get into here, but the setting is there and it was on for me as well. So in the case of the Orbit Writer, we want to toggle that setting to off.
Off. Disconnect on sleep. Switch button off.
And there's a little explanation from VoiceOver there of what the option does. It's kind of self-explanatory, but if we just do a flick right, it will tell you a bit more about it.
Disconnect this Braille display when your iPhone sleeps.
There you go. So we've now turned that off. So I'm going to go back to the home screen.
Home, FaceTime.
And then we'll lock the phone again. And you've hopefully noticed there that it's not disconnected. So if I now do the home command on the orbit writer, which of course is space and H.
934.
That's woken the phone up. Let's say it was not near me, so I couldn't do Face ID. I could do the home command again.
934.
I'll do it again because it had actually locks on me while I was saying that.
Enter passcode.
And we're now on the passcode screen, so using the writer, I'm just going to type in my passcode. For obvious reasons, we're not going to let you hear it.
FaceTime.
And there we go. It's unlocked and we can use it as normal. So there you go. If you're having that problem with the writer or any other Braille display, just go to Settings, Accessibility, VoiceOver, look for Braille, and then look for the Braille display that you're having the problem with. It doesn't have to be connected at the time when you change this, so you can change it whenever you want, and it will take effect, obviously, the next time it connects. So go to the Braille display, swipe down to More Info, and then find Disconnect on Sleep, and if it's on, just toggle that to off.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to talk about the Meta glasses. Now, we may have mentioned them once or twice on Tech Talk, and they've become quite popular over the last few years as not only a great mainstream product, but a product that is quite assistive for blind and partially sighted people. A few of our RNIB Connect radio team have them. The latest addition to the Meta glasses gang is Mr. Toby Davey. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Hubert. I feel that I've got the blind glasses now with the Meta AI glasses and my Oakleys.
Yes. I mean, a quite interesting nickname there as well, blind glasses, because obviously you've got the Oakley sunglasses. Now, obviously, there's the Ray-Bans and then there's the Oakley kind of models. How comes you've gone for the Oakleys? What kind of persuades you to get them?
Well, I'm a bit of an Oakley fan. My other glasses, sunglasses I have are all Oakley, and I like the Oakley style. And also, when the Ray-Bans first came out, I was sort of waiting for the Oakleys because I like them. But also, I think the Oakleys have a slightly better camera and battery life and things like that, and also slightly water resistant as well. So those were a few features, not just the style and the brand and everything else. There were some other reasons for it.
When it comes to kind of, you know, the features you've seen before you got them, what sort of attracted you to them? Which features particularly you thought, this is perfect?
I suppose a couple of them. The main one for me really is being able to do a live video call. I know you can't do it through, you know, sort of be my eyes at the moment and that kind of stuff, but being able to do that through WhatsApp with, you know, a friend or somebody else, that was one of the reasons. To be able to do stuff hands-free as well, so you're not having to hold your camera out and take a picture of something and get it described. So I've used my Meta AI glasses for describing, you know, scenes and things like that. When I'm walking about, it's really good for doing that, especially, you know, walking around with my guide dog and stuff, and, you know, he starts to slow down and I'm thinking, well, is there somebody in front of me? And I can just quickly ask Meta, you know, sort of, hey, Meta, what's in front of me? Or take a picture and it'll tell me what's in front of me. And I'll say, is there a person? And it'll say no. So I think, okay, he's just slowing down a bit. There's nothing in the way. So, you know, those are the sort of things I really wanted to get the Meta AI glasses for. And also for, you know, sort of walking around, you know, so if you're going down a high street or something like that, and if trying to find a shop that you've never been to before and being able to take a quick picture, ask Meta, you know, what's in front of me? What type of shop is it? You know, that kind of stuff. So those are the main reasons I've really wanted to get them.
Yeah, I love the hands-free kind of aspect, especially when, you know, you're walking around and you can do messages on WhatsApp, whether it's text messages or whether it's voice messages. It's just nice to be able to do that hands-free. And with the video, with the photo taking, I remember walking with Caesar from the RNIB Grimaldi building to St Pancras train station. There was some roadworks which Caesar stopped at, and I had no clue why he's done this. And I kind of said to the glasses, you know, hey, Meta, look what's in front of me. And it said, oh, there's a bit of roadworks. And it's like, that's why you stopped. So it gives you that extra clarity. Now, one thing I quite enjoy doing with the Meta glasses, and I don't know if you've tried any of this, is in shops when shopping for things or reading menus in restaurants. Have you done a bit of that?
I haven't quite gone that far yet. I although I've had my Meta Oakley glasses for, you know, a few months now. I it took me a bit of time to really sort of start wearing them because I haven't worn glasses for a long time. Obviously, I wear sunglasses when the sun's out kind of stuff, but I don't normally wear glasses anymore. So it was a bit of a sort of, I suppose, maybe a shock to the system and getting used to having a pair of glasses on all the time and wondering, oh, do, are people looking at my glasses kind of stuff. So I do wear them quite a lot, and especially, you know, getting around with my guide dog at the moment, I have them virtually on all the time, you know, as I mentioned, for taking pictures and just having things described. So, yeah, it took a little bit of time to get used to wearing them, but... Yeah, no, I do like them, and it feels fine wearing them now.
Yeah, for the menus, I remember the first time I sat in a restaurant, and usually, obviously, I, you know, either look up the menu online if it's accessible. Often it may not be, maybe just a PDF or a visual one, or often I ask the staff. But to be able to actually sit down in a restaurant, hold a menu in front of me, I had this when I went in America, especially, and said, you know, what am I holding? It would say you're holding a menu. And I'd say, well, what's on it? It would then break down the sections of the menu, which is quite nice because you may not actually be interested in the whole thing. And then you can say, well, can you read me the sandwiches? And it will do it. And it just, it adds that extra level of independence where you can ask something yourself and find out without having to actually ask another person. You can do it yourself thanks to the glasses. I think it's quite liberating.
Definitely so. I think that's one of the main things about it is, you know, although, you know, sort of, members of staff in, you know, restaurants and supermarkets and stuff and things like that are always, you know, most of the time fairly helpful and friendly, but sometimes you can never find one, and you just be able to go in and independently have a look around, you know, take a few pictures with your Meta glasses, or even, you know, do a live video call through WhatsApp through a family friend or somebody like that, and just get a bit of assistance, you know, and to be, you know, sort of more independent and not to have to try and find somebody and ask somebody about things. I think that you're right. That's one of the main big benefits of, you know, sort of the Meta AI glasses and being able to have things described, take pictures and describe stuff, and that live video thing, which I think is a really good feature.
Now, obviously, there's a few other things, you know, happening with the Meta glasses throughout 2026. There was talking of, you know, opening up the software so that other apps can take advantage of the glasses as well, which could be an absolute game changer. I mean, wearable technology in general has changed how independent people can be. You know, there's apps like Seeing AI that are looking at to featuring on the Meta glasses, apps like Scribe Me, which provide a live AI assist. I mean, there's so many things wearable technology has opened up. What's your kind of views on, you know, not only wearable technology, but also mainstream technology becoming, you know, a game changer for blind and partially sighted people without having to, you know, necessarily always look at specialist tech?
I think that's part of the fantastic things about, you know, the Meta glasses. They weren't necessarily, you know, designed to be the blind glasses, as I jokingly say, but, you know, they're mainstream, you know, piece of technology, which looks cool because, you know, if you're a fan of Oakley like me or a fan of Ray-Bans, it's cool glasses. You know, they look good. They're not designed for the blind as some things are, which sometimes don't look so cool and trendy and stuff and things. But it's a bit like, I suppose, you know, sort of having voiceover on all your Apple devices. It means that, you know, you can go into a shop and buy something which is offline, trendy, up to date, that is accessible as well. And I think, you know, that's really good to have. And that's, you know, that shows how technology is developing. You know, when we see, you know, sort of, you know, speech in everything, you know, there's so many things now that have speech and so many sighted people, you know, using voice assistants and stuff, which is something that we use all the time kind of thing. So I think having a bit of technology that's mainstream, that's got access built in, is absolutely fantastic, or something like the Meta AI glasses that become, you know, very accessible and to us all as blind or partially sighted people, and useful, and, you know, they're trendy and they're what everybody else has got. So you're not, you know, having to buy the sort of, you know, specialist technologies, bits of equipment. But that's not to say that specialist bits of equipment are not useful. I got, you know, a couple of Braille displays kind of stuff, and, you know, they're made by specialist companies, and, you know, that's something which, you know, won't become, yeah, sort of mainstream kind of stuff. So I think there's still a place for those bits of technology. I don't think anyone mainstream could make a Braille display, you know, kind of stuff. It would be fantastic if they did, kind of thing. But, you know, I think there's still a place for both, the specialist tech and obviously the mainstream tech that's accessible. And the more companies that embed accessibility, the better life is going to be for everybody, I think.
Certainly, I agree. I think it's absolutely game-changing. And you can also use them as, you know, headphones, let's not forget. You know, I often listen to music or radio when I'm wearing the glasses as well. And it's open ear, so it's safe to do when you're outdoors. How do you find listening to, you know, other audio on these?
Well, funnily enough, it comes back to my guide dog training. But when I was training with Boston and Amy, the trainer from Guide Dogs, and Boston, because, you know, she was training Boston for quite some time, and they get very attached to their trainers and sometimes get a little bit distracted if they can see or smell the trainer, kind of stuff. So we had to do a few routes where Amy would be either on the other side of the road or hiding behind a car or something so Boston couldn't see her. So the only way that we could communicate was using my Oakley Meta A glasses and having the sort of the Bluetooth capability of Amy calling me and having that live call open. So I could hear her through the Meta AI glasses, but I obviously could still hear what was around me and stuff and things. And she would just say, oh, you know, Boston's moved there because there's a person in the way, or there's, you know, that kind of thing. Or he's taking you that way because there's somebody in front of you and he is by the post or what have you, kind of stuff. So it was really good for having that and being able to walk around, you know, sort of, again, sort of hands-free again kind of stuff. You know, I've obviously had Boston's harness in my hand and his lead in my hand as well, but it meant that I could still engage with a phone call and get that input as well. So I think as a sort of pair of, you know, sort of Bluetooth glasses using your phone and that kind of stuff, they work incredibly well for that.
Well, welcome to the Meta Glasses gang, certainly, and we look forward to finding out what other apps and features they'll be able to work with throughout 2026, which you can follow on RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, you will know as soon as we know about something about this, you will know about it too. Thank you very much, though, Toby Davey, for telling us about your experience with the Oakley Meta glasses here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thanks so much indeed, Hubert.
And that's just about it from us for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. And if you want to get in contact with us, have you got any questions, anything you want to share? Have we missed something that you think we should be talking about? Let us know. All contributions are always welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address that you need. We'll be back with you same time next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.